Hey you, wherever you are in the world right now, thank you so much for being here with me. We know that we're living in some crazy times and we know that the world is changing. So let's create a bridge as we travel through one another's countries, removing all the labels, coming together as one people in one world. And as we do this, this is why our signature talk today is so important. Today, I have the privilege of welcoming my guest speaker, Carrie Laws from the UK. Hi, Carrie. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. Thank you. Happy to be here.
Thank you so much for being with us today. Your message is so needed and so appreciated. So thank you.
Thank you for having me.
So if you could just introduce yourself to the world and tell us a little bit about who Carrie Laws is and what you do.
So I'm a life coach and a author of a self-help book called Carrie Explains the Law of Attraction, which came out in July. And I help people with the inner work. I help them explore the layers underneath the surface and help them with their self-improvement, their self-discovery, and really delve deeper into that inner world so that they can be the most empowered, happiest, best versions of themselves.
I love all of that, Carrie. That's amazing. With the work that you've done, I have to imagine that you've been on this incredible journey yourself, because most people that are able to do what you do have gone through some things that really help them to be that subject matter expert in what it is that they're doing. So is that true for you?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's always been my intention, is to make a difference, because I had a hard time myself and I've been through so much that I really feel called to help other people. And because I understand where they're coming from, I feel like that's the empowered position I'm in order to fully get into their shoes and see things from their perspective and be able to talk on their level and help them find their way out of a challenge, because I've been through it myself.
And what has it been that you have been through? Can you share a little bit about that?
It's a long story. There's a lot to it.
We'll chunk it out then.
Okay. So shall I start at the beginning?
Sure.
Okay. So I grew up as an only child to a single mum. And we experienced very significant financial hardship and homelessness. And it was tough. I was growing up in survival mode, and I had to think about how we were going to get through each day, even as a child, rather than putting my needs first, as it were. And I think as children, we internalize our circumstances, we take them personally, we take them on, and certain things become ingrained in us that become habits as we, become adults. And then we have to relearn all these things. But yeah, so as a child, I took on the responsibility basically of being an equal to my mum, and we worked together as like a little team. And we moved around quite a lot. We would move. There were times when, we'd be sleeping on a park bench, but there were also times where we would stay with her friends, or she'd get a new boyfriend and we'd move in there. But what I remember mostly is that when my mum came to pick me up from school, I wouldn't know where we were going. Each day it might be different. And I had that, unpredictability about my life. And it wasn't until I was 7 that we actually had our own home, as it were, a place that we actually could call home and a place that I felt like I belonged. But once we got to that stage, it was really tough financially, and my mum would be working, say, 3 jobs, and I'd be taking myself to school far too young, and I'd be getting on the bus because it was quite far. and take myself home from school and end up cooking myself dinner, which I definitely shouldn't have been using, you know, the kitchen probably at all at that age. I think I was about seven or eight. And she'd leave out instructions that would tell me how to do everything, like put the butter in the pan and this much, and measure this out with a cup and heat it up on the stove. And I wasn't making anything fancy, but, you know, I still shouldn't have been really doing it. And then when I was 12, my mum became very sick. She got ME, which depletes you of all your energy. And at that time, the doctors didn't know what it was. So she was really unwell and unable to work. So I got my first job and was working in a bakery at about 5 in the morning every morning before school, just to bring in some income.
Oh my goodness. So there's this is quite a start to your life, to say the least. And yeah. I can definitely relate and appreciate being a little girl who's making meals in a kitchen when you shouldn't be. I mean, I remember being 6 years old and making hot dogs on a stove and really having no idea what I was doing and how uncomfortable I felt, just thinking, I wish somebody would just do this for me, because I knew intuitively that that responsibility was way bigger than I even knew how to handle. Like, if something, in the sense of danger that I felt was so enormous as well. And I'm sure much of your, you know, much of your story that you, or that journey rather, that you had traveled, you had this overwhelming sense of danger that you probably felt, whether it was on the park bench or, you know, being in someone else's home that you didn't know, or, you know, all of these different situations. And that really invokes a lot of trauma in your body. Right. But when your mom gets sick, you're 12 years old. It's kind of interesting, because I had a very defining moment when I was 12 too. But when you were 12, your mom gets sick and she has ME, you said. What is that?
It's like, I can't think of the medical words, but it's like chronic fatigue syndrome.
Okay.
So you get very tired very quickly, lack energy. And actually, when she first, her first symptoms was that she was paralyzed from the neck down for the first 6 months. Doctors didn't know what that was at that time. And she actually looked into nutrition to, you know, cure her symptoms, and which worked. So we went from eating junk to choosing organic foods and certain kinds of fresh vegetables and things like that, which really helped her. But yeah, regardless, once she was better, she was obviously then still out quite a lot. So yeah, the thing about the danger, like you said, I definitely recall that. And we lived in a ground floor flat, an apartment. And I remember we didn't have curtains. So at night when mum was out working or wherever she was, the big black windows really scared me. And being at home alone, and I would have all the lights on and music on and be cleaning frantically to keep busy because of that danger, like you said. It's quite a strange memory, really, of being scared of windows. And I'm still scared of windows now and prefer to not live on the ground floor.
Wow. Yeah. And I mean, that's just because of the trauma being stored in the body. I share this quite often, that when we go through trauma, we hold on to it on a cellular level, which is why we can remember things like where we were when really traumatic things have happened. Like, most people in the United States know exactly where they were when they heard about 9/11. And the, you know, the planes going into the Twin Towers, and they could recall everything that was in their environment when they got that news, or they watched it on TV, and who was with them, and, you know, all the little details. And this is the thing that most people don't understand about trauma, is that that experience sits in our bodies on a cellular level. So I can understand how even today, just Windows could affect you because it's stored in your body. So that makes perfect sense. So you're 12 years old and your mom gets sick. And then how does this move forward for you?
So previous to that, actually, just to backtrack slightly, we come from a poor background anyway, and I wasn't expected to become very much or to achieve very much. That was just, you know, no one in our family had finished school. And because of my, childhood leading up to this point, I didn't have many friends. I didn't feel like I belonged. I didn't feel like I could relate to my peers as much as I tried desperately, which probably put other children off as so clingy and so needy, that I read a lot of books. And a teacher noticed that I was reading The Hobbit, and I think I was about 8 at that point. And you know, he said, are you actually enjoying it? Do you understand it? And I was like, yeah, I love it. So he actually took a shine to me and gave me his father's box set of The Lord of the Rings to encourage me to read even more. Then I went on to get the highest score in one of our school tests in the year. And then he spoke to my mum about me going to grammar school, which is you have to take a test called the 11 plus test. And so I took this test and got in and went to grammar school, which then, you know, gave me this huge push in education. So at age 11, that's when we go into this school. So by 12, I was getting a much better education. I was surrounded by other girls. It was a girls' school, so surrounded by other girls who were quite intelligent as well. And I started to form friendships that really worked for me and just gave me a bigger view of life and the kind of childhood I could have had. Fine, okay, but I had a lot of adults who were then starting to support me in the form of friends, parents. And yeah, we just started to reach out to more people and had more people around us who perhaps, you know, my mum had rejected a lot of people as I was a child, like our family weren't really around. We didn't seem to have that much help. But then as I got into that school and have these new people around us, I learned to start reaching out a little bit more. I mean, I wasn't great at it. I've never been great at asking for help. And I think that comes from being such a tough cookie as a child. You know, you just think I can do anything. I can do it by myself. But I think that really made a difference in my teenage years. So from 12 onwards, I started to reach out. We started to have some support, even if it was just emotional support. And because I was at that age where I was able to communicate a bit more, I was able to also tell my mum, you know, we need to focus on this, or we need to fix that, or I need you to be here a bit more, or whatever it was, and even encourage her to see a nutritionist, and get that help that we needed. So I think that was the point that things started to turn around, and it was partly due to me reading so many books and getting into a better school, which is crazy but true.
I love that. And it's amazing that at 8 years old, you're reading The Hobbit. I know for a lot of kids that are in middle school, reading is such a great outlet just to escape whatever it is that they're going through in their environment. And of course, family situations are all different. And a lot of times there's this judgment on, you know, other from their peers, as far as like what, as you said, like what it is that they are, how, you know, their families, like where they came from, if they have money, if they don't have money, like all of these different things. Did you find at any time that maybe you struggled with that identity process for yourself. Like, did you feel any shame around that, or any kind of feelings that made you feel different than the other kids?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. And I think I carried that on into my teens. And I remember being terrified that I was about to go to what I was thinking of as snob school, where the other girls will have come from money and private tutors to get in and things like that. So I really did struggle with being the poor girl and having experienced that in my previous school. So actually I came into this new school thinking I could have a makeover here. I could I could be anyone, and no one needs to know what's going on at home, where I've come from, my background, any of that. And I kind of did that. I actually, almost turned in. Well, I say almost, I probably did turn into one of the mean girls, you know, because I had this sort of power. Like, I felt empowered by the freedom to be whoever I wanted to be. So for a few years, I really ran with that, and I chose the friends that I wanted, and adapted myself to fit in, and, you know, just did things that probably weren't authentic to me, really, and almost betrayed my inner world that I'd created by reading all these books and, you know, educating myself and becoming this strong, independent little thing. Yeah, I was ashamed of who I was, despite the, you know, now how proud I am of my childhood and what it made me into. Actually, at that point, I was quite ashamed.
Yeah. And I appreciate the honesty that you share and the transparency. And I think, you know, at that period of time for young adults, it's so difficult because their bodies are changing. They're in this struggle of being one foot out and one foot in as far as where they are in their life. So there's a part of them that wants that independence, but then there's this other part of them that wants to be safe and reassured that everything's going to be okay. And that is difficult for kids that, or even young adults that don't have that full safety net to fall into. And right now we kind of, you know, have this world we're living in where it just feels kind of unsafe in a sense. And what would you offer up for anyone that's listening as far as what can help them to feel safe?
I mean, I think what lies underneath all of this is that we all want to be seen. We all want to be seen for our true, authentic selves, and we want to connect with other people on that level. So it's a scary thing to put yourself out there, but actually that's all any of us want, is to be seen as who we truly are. So opening up to those people actually creates a stronger bond at a deeper level and gets you that support that you're craving and that reassurance from the people around you that you really need. And I've experienced that myself. You know, I've had friendships and relationships where I've been too scared to admit what I'm experiencing in that friendship or relationship and say to them, you know, I feel like I'm giving too much and you're taking too much, or that kind of thing with around boundaries. And actually, if you can get to the point where you will sit down with that person and tell them this, they'll be surprised to hear it, but also feel like you've let them in. And being vulnerable is the most attractive thing that any of us can be. And to let someone into our inner world and our inner thoughts and tell them our worries and our fears lets them step forward and support us and help us. And like I said, yeah, I've experienced that honestly firsthand, of saying that to someone I was terrified to say that to. And they've said, you're kidding. And I'm making you feel that way. You know, I just want you to be happy. So, you know, tell me what you need and I'll give it to you. Because these are people that love us, you know, and we love. And they do want to be there for us if we just let them know how they can do that.
Yeah. And at any time, you know, through this process, did you feel yourself experiencing I guess maybe this metamorphosing of releasing some of the trauma that you've experienced as a little girl as you're transitioning into adulthood. And how did those layers peel back for you, and what did that feel like for you?
I think, I've always been interested in self-development and reading self-help books from a young age. So I've always turned to books. Is that's like my, you know, first port of call. I've always done that. But I feel like I continued this sort of front for a very long time, and I had this mask on for a very long time of being who I wanted to be, like being who, or making it look like how I thought I should look, if that makes sense, of, you know, doing all the things that I thought I was supposed to do and having all the right things and doing the right job, or I don't know, like all of this was a big facade around me. And it actually wasn't until I had depression and anxiety that I started to really delve into doing my inner work, which is then when I started to strip back the layers and really embrace who I've always been underneath all of these layers. It was through this depression that, and the doctors wanted me to be on antidepressants, and I said, no, I didn't want that. And I looked for alternative ways to sort myself out, and that included counselling and CBT, which is cognitive behavioural therapy, and nutrition as well. I'd seen my mum, you know, help herself with nutrition, so I went through the nutrition route as well. And even eating a couple of Brazil nuts a day boosts your mood and things like that. I remember my cat even trying to feed me at the time because I wasn't looking after myself very well. He kept bringing in mice and things to try and feed me. I soon got the message that I should probably eat a bit more. but it was through all of that, and actually I got to the point that I realized I just couldn't handle my life. I couldn't handle it the way that it was. I was carrying a lot of responsibility, this huge burden, and I'd been carrying it since I was a child and never really questioned it, of trying to look after everyone else and completely forgetting myself. And I wanted to, I remember explaining this to my mom when I decided to move to Thailand, and she really didn't want me to go. And I had to explain it to her in a very blunt way to make her understand. And I said, you know, I want to end this life and start a new one somewhere else. Otherwise, I might actually, you know, end this life. I've got to have a fresh start. I've got to get away from my circumstances. I've got to get away from my life, from everyone in my life. I've just got to go. And I did, and it was all a bit of a blur, to be honest. I just woke up one day and I was lying by a pool in Thailand and I was like, how on earth did this happen? The last few months have just disappeared, and I really felt like the universe stepped in and, yeah, took me somewhere else. I applied for one job. I knew I wanted to go to Thailand. I applied for one single job that sounded absolutely perfect, living in a boarding school and working in a boarding school. So everything was set up for me. It was a very safe way to do it. And I applied and had an interview, and they said, you need a teaching qualification to come, even though I wasn't going to be teaching. And I said, oh, I haven't got one, otherwise I'd be a teacher. And actually they said, have you got anything? And I had this little certificate that really doesn't qualify me for anything, but they said, that's fine, that'll do, and somehow managed to be there. So I really felt like it was meant to be. And from that point, I had this time alone. I had a year, away from the life that I'd left behind, mostly to be completely alone and with my thoughts and start exploring a spiritual path of meditation, I went and spent a week in a Buddhist monastery with monks and nuns and learned meditation and mindfulness from them, which was incredible. I made some gorgeous friends in Thailand who were also expats, as well as some Thai locals. Made some really lovely friends that I could talk at this really deep level and explore these things that were, you know, popping up for me, and things that I really needed to delve deeper into. I spent a weekend training in Reiki randomly with a friend for fun, and I've since used Reiki to heal others and to heal myself, which is beautiful. And yeah, I just found myself in that cliche way that people say, you know, I went to the East and found myself, and I took on a lot of, you know, the Eastern beliefs in happiness over success, and definitely applied that to my life, and thought my spiritual journey was over, came back to the UK, and then it carried on.
I want to talk about that spiritual journey in a second, but the whole time that you were, I'm just going to go back for a moment to this time that you were in this depression and just feeling a lot of anxiety. I know there's a lot of people that probably are listening right now that totally can relate to that sense of just feeling out of sorts and having this anxiety. And for you, you said it was important that, you know, you took more of a holistic approach, and, you know, I'm glad that you had a doctor that was supporting you as far as what you were doing. And I would just encourage anyone who's listening that if they're really struggling with this to seek out care that will support your decision and as far as how you handle it. But when you talked about moving to Thailand, one of the things that you said is that you had this need to start over, and you inferred that if you didn't like literally uproot your entire life to Thailand, then it sounded to me like you were contemplating ending your life. Now, if you could, I mean, tell us what really drove you to going to Thailand and making that decision, because I have to believe like that's ending your life wasn't really an option. That's not what you wanted to do. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And actually, now that you say that, it's helping me remember that. I remember feeling like, yeah, I wanted to end it all. And my big thing was that I'd just done a master's in creative writing. I've always been a writer. Obviously, I've got this crazy love of books, so I always wanted to be a writer. Just completed a year, studying my master's in creative writing. And I remember this thought being in my head of, what's the point in writing? What's the point? Why would you do that? It's completely pointless. No one's ever going to read it. You know. And it just, this thought was really strong, this opinion. And this opinion felt like I'd always had it. Like it was such a strong energy inside my mind saying, writing is silly, is pointless. Why would you even do that? And I actually was only able to argue with that because I'd just done my master's in creative writing. And I literally was arguing with this other voice in my head saying, if it really was pointless, if I really have always thought that, why would I have spent a year and thousands of pounds studying creative writing? This is not my own, this is not my voice, and this is not my own opinion. This has come from somewhere else. And I think that actually then scared me by the thought of, well, if this opinion can get so strongly into my mind, what if another thought comes in that I can't reason with, that I don't have hard evidence to argue against? And that was why I got to the point of thinking, I really have to do something here, because I don't want to have the thought and then carry it out of ending my life. So what am I going to do to prevent that?
Yeah, so where did that thought come from?
I have no idea, honestly. It just, I was depressed and I was spending almost every day in bed. I could literally barely get out of the bed to even use the bathroom. It took so much effort. And the bathroom was next to my bedroom. You know, it wasn't far, but I felt so heavy with this depression and such a dark place that, I just started to have these strange thoughts that what's the point in anything? And I guess I started to run through a list of, okay, what's the point of this? Nothing. What's the point of that? Nothing. What's the point of writing? Well, hang on. I've just spent a year of my life training in this, so that's not my voice, that's not my opinion. And it was that at that point that I was able to turn it around. It's that's an experience, honestly.
Yeah, that's amazing that you were able to pinpoint it and identify it and actually put words to it. And I find a lot of times that people that I talk with, there is a defining moment, a very specific defining moment that alters the course of their path. And usually it is a interruption of that thought process that makes them do something different and makes the change. Because to your point, whenever we are troubled with negative thoughts, I mean, a really great tool to use is just asking the question, is it true? Is whatever you're thinking, is it true? Because maybe it's not true. Maybe it's something that you just have to release because it's not really true. Like you've scripted it in your head for some reason. Maybe it's somebody's, you know, somebody planted a seed for you, or maybe somebody said something and you hung on to it for some reason, or maybe it's just a trauma response. But in reality, if the answer to the question is it's not true, then you really need to release it and allow it to let it go so that you can do what it is that you're meant to do. And I love, Carrie, that you had that innate ability to identify it in that precise moment and then make a decision around that. And anybody that's listening that is curled up in a ball, wrapped in a blanket and struggling to get out of bed, ask yourself these, you know, if these thoughts are true, because if they're not true, go a different direction. You know, it doesn't have to be like that. And if anybody out there is, you know, struggling with suicide or any kind of mental health darkness, please, please, please get support from your community and rally up, you know, that support system for yourself so that you can get out of the darkness. But I love that, you know, part of this process too for you is you have this connectedness to your cat, and animals have such a beautiful way of just keeping us, I guess, like on our toes. Like they intuitively can feel us, and they can feel like if there's something wrong. And you know, here your cat is literally bringing you food. Not that you would eat a dead mouse by any means, but.
No, and I used to say to him, you know, thank you. You know, I didn't want to offend him. I wanted to be grateful. So thank you very much. This is lovely. I'm really going to enjoy this. And then wait for him to sort of be satisfied that I was pleased. And then off he went, and I'd be squealing with rubber gloves on and, you know, the dustpan and brush, like, ooh, I've got a pick up this dead rat or whatever it was. I would do it without him seeing, so he would obviously come back and think I'd eaten it.
Oh my goodness.
Probably meant, you know, that gave him reason to bring me more.
I love that, and it's just a testament of how much your cat loves you, obviously.
Yeah, it's true.
Oh my goodness. So as you go into adulthood, how are things for you?
I did my master's and then had the depression that followed it at the age of, I want to say 31, and I'm 37 now, so it wasn't that long ago. So most of my, you know, well, all of my 20s, I was kind of lording up thinking I was the bee's knees and had this life that looked good on the outside, but wasn't quite you know, doing the job on the inside. And it wasn't until, my 30s that the depression turned everything around, and you're having the spiritual awakening and all of that really changed my life. And it feels like I've had multiple lives in that time. I've been various different people up until this point. So, you know, it was the spiritual journey I went on, and then figuring out being single for a long time, for the first time in my life. I was single for about 5-6 years, and really spent the time getting to know myself and finding out what my priorities were in terms of putting myself first, which I still struggle with now. You know, once you've got these things ingrained in you from childhood, you continue to try to get that a little bit deeper and improve a little bit more, and it takes a lot of work, but I'm at a stage where I'm quite happy. And then I decided to learn about the law of attraction on top of everything else.
So if we can back up, so you mentioned spirituality. Mm-hmm. So tell us how that happened for you, because I know a lot of people struggle with this topic. They're not really, like, there's people that are all in, and then there's people that they're just not, because they just don't know how to embrace that, or they question it, like all of these different things, you know, they put on it. So what happened to you that you had the spirituality? Like, what was the defining moment for you?
It's a strange one, actually, because I guess I wasn't ever really particularly religious. My mum's Christian, and she brought me up vaguely Christian, and I went to a Christian school to begin with. But and that, you know, that's quite common in England, especially when I was growing up. But I never really took on any religion, and actually I felt a little bit out of the loop in terms of religion. And then I just decided to explore that a bit more, really. And so obviously I turned to books, and I read a lot of books, and I've read the Bible, which I don't know that many people, especially, you know, in England could say, but I have read it cover to cover to really get to know whether this was for me. And I've decided to sort of put my own beliefs together and live to my own sort of, not rules, but morals and values. And I think that all of us need to do that, whether we're of any religion or not. We all have certain morals and certain values and certain beliefs that we take on and we live by, or we don't. And I think that's what spirituality really is just working out what you believe and exploring that. And I think you can be of a particular religion and still be spiritual. You know, you can take on a little bit of Buddhism, you can believe in karma, or you can, you know, take some bits from different religions and put it together. And a lot of them have very similar beliefs and values anyway. So I guess really you need to be your own sort of spiritual compass and decide for you what works and what serves you and what benefits you, and not believe in something just because someone else has told you to, or because it works for them. Not everything that works for other people works for all of us. We're all individuals, we're all unique, and you know, we also all see life from our own perspective, our own knowledge, our own experience. It's very difficult to actually see things from someone else's point of view without putting your own knowledge and experience into their shoes as well. So I think if you bear all of that in mind, looking at a spiritual path really is sort of up to each individual to explore in their own way for their own reasons. And for me, it started with meditation. And I didn't see that as any kind of religious or even spiritual practice. I just desperately wanted to clear my mind. Because at that point I was, dealing with depression and anxiety, and I really wanted something, some tool to help me relax and calm down, and yeah, preferably shut up the mind chatter that I was finding overwhelming.
I love the way you put that, the shut up the mind chatter, because I think that's overall one of the things that really gets people into trouble is they listen to this, you know, chatter in their mind, and then they start making decisions that they end up regretting. And it's really interesting, or I find it's really interesting, that when you look at the 12-step program that is used for recovery, this is a program that was authored by all world religions. The manuscript for it is enormous. And basically, they just pulled the best pieces of all the world religions and built this program for recovery for humans that are recovering from alcohol or any kind of addiction of substance of any kind. And the mindfulness piece of it right now, I think, you know, people are really struggling with this turning inward process. So this mind chatter that they have is excessive and they don't know what to do with it. So to your point, instead of turning to vices or instead of turning to something that's going to harm them, to actually have a technique or a tool that's going to give them some calm, that's going to give them some serenity and some peace and allow them just to clear their mind, like you said, I think is absolutely so beautiful and so necessary in the way of the world today, especially with how everything is. The law of attraction that you talk about, can you share with us a little bit more about what you mean by that? Because I know what that means, but I'm sure there's someone listening that doesn't really know what that means. So I'll just have you clear that up for them.
Sure. Okay. Well, in my understanding of the law of attraction, it's like gravity. It's a law of nature that is affecting all of us, whether we believe in it or not, whether we've even ever heard of it or not. It's sort of running things behind the scenes. So the law of attraction is like attracts like. And what that means is when we're of a certain vibration, our energy is on a certain frequency, we attract things to us that are of the same vibration or the same energetic frequency, like tuning into a radio. And that's it, basically. In the simplest terms, that's it. And when I wanted to learn about the law of attraction, it was because I'd been single for a long time and I was trying to attract love into my life. And I wanted to learn about it. And so, of course, I'm going to say it again, I turned to all the books and read all the books, watched all the videos. You know, there's some films out there. I think I even at one point I was having coaching and I asked my coach about it as well. And, you know, I really tried to absorb all the knowledge about the law of attraction, because what I really wanted was a book that told me step by step, this is what you do. You do this, 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 and then ta-da, you get results. So I created my own process and I practiced and practiced, you know, trying to get what I want, and came up with this 5-step process. And by the time I started using it and was seeing incredible results, honestly, I've manifested the craziest things, like, you know, homes and cars and dates and my current boyfriend. Yeah. And jobs. Did I say jobs? I even manifested a job just when I really needed it. And it completely came out of the blue. And I'd actually asked the universe, you know, can you just sort this out for me? I really need some extra money so I can afford this home that I wanted. And I honestly got a Facebook message offering me a job within the next hour, which was just nuts. So by the time I was able to do all of that, I decided that the book that I'd wanted at the beginning of all of this, I was going to write. And I did. And it's called Kerry Explains the Law of Attraction. And it's a really simple step-by-step guide with my 5-step process that I use. And it works. Like, honestly, it works. And I use it myself.
I love it. Carrie, is there any other tools that you can offer to the audience that may help them in the times that we're living in today?
You know, I would just say reach out for help. Honestly, the best thing you can do is ask for help. There's so many professionals out there who are ready and willing to work with you, to support you in whatever capacity that is, whether, you know, you need medical support, mental support, emotional, spiritual, soul level, any of that. There are people out there who, yeah, want to help and are willing to help. And I think also the people around you love you, and they're there for a reason. They're in your life for a reason. You have this team of people around you ready to catch you when you fall, or ready to talk to you at length about anything, even if you don't feel, you know, like what you want to talk about is their usual interest. You absolutely can open up to these people. That's why they're in your life. And there will definitely be someone around you that is there and ready to support you.
Thank you so much for being with us today. I mean, you're just a breath of fresh air, and it's beautiful to see how your journey has unfolded for you, and, you know, this place that you've come to. And as a soul sister who understands, you know, the difficult feats of going through adversity and the traumas and things like that, like, I do commend you. So thank you. And if I picked up your earth angel feather off of the ground, what would your message to the world be?
It would be that you always have a choice, and literally in any moment, in anything that you're going through, in any circumstances, you have a choice in how you react, in how you behave, in how you think, and how you speak. And honestly, that has served me so many times to think, you know, this moment has come to me and I'm suffering, I'm struggling with it, but I still have a choice in how I'm going to respond.
Absolutely. Carrie, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I'm just so filled with gratitude that you are here today. And I just, you know, I don't even have enough words. I thank you.
I actually got deja vu at one point during this. So it was definitely meant to be. And I'm so grateful to be here and to be connected with you. Thank you so much.
Aw. That's all we have time for today. This is Catherine Daniels reminding you to live your authentic life with peace. And as always, retreat to peace. We will see you next time. Welcome back, everyone. What an amazing conversation we just had. I can't even express enough how important in these times that it is that everyone's taking care of themselves. I had a friend from Greece reach out to me recently via email, and she had shared with me some personal information in regards to where things are in the country. I also have some friends in Canada and other friends in the UK. Various people are reaching out, and I encourage you to reach out if you would like to at retreattopeacellc@gmail.com. And the reason I'm encouraging you to reach out is because when you reach out, it actually helps me to understand how I can help support you and what it is that I'm bringing to you through my show, but also what topics are important for you to hear. So getting back to my friend in Greece, we had a really nice interaction throughout the year, and she is in a situation where, of course, their country has heightened security around lockdowns and things like that. I know Canada is also in a similar situation, and there's other countries that are experiencing similar situations. Most people in the United States, because of the diversity of the different states and what each state is doing, don't really have a clear idea of what it is other countries are experiencing. So it's really important to me that the messages that I bring week to week are on point as far as helping you get through these dark times. And especially as people are suffering and are really going into a state of not really sure what's happening, where it's going, what's going to happen, I think it's more important than ever that we just talk for a few minutes around that. So one of the things that I wanted to bring to the table was basically the conversation around taking care of yourself. I know several people have reached out to me and said that, you know, it's just getting extremely harder because they personally know people who have been affected, whether it's by suicide, drug overdose, depression, deep, dark depression. There's a variety of things that's happening to people because they're just really struggling with some of what's happening around them, or maybe what's happening in their own personal life. For you, I would encourage you to find ways to really look at opportunities to take care of yourself. And even if it means just one small act a day, do something that is going to help you feel better. For me, it could be just, you know, taking a shower with Epsom salts and detoxifying my body. Sometimes just drinking a lot of water and giving my body the fluid that it needs. Staying away from other beverages that wouldn't be as healthy. But it's really important to make every single decision around taking care of yourself and for healing. These times are being stored in our body right now, and these times are being stored in our body with information of what it is you're experiencing. So it's really, really important that you're aware of that, because that is going to retain in your cellular memory for the rest of your life. So be aware of what it is you're doing and how you're taking care of yourself. One of the things that I've done is I've redesigned my office and actually put in my little section of the room as a area to do yoga and to just take care of myself with meditation and things like that. So I have my oil diffuser, my you know, anything that's going to help me to feel in a zen state, to, you know, be in a place where I'm going to be meditative and taking care of myself. Think about things that also are going to distract you. So if you are a reader, look for books that are going to give you a feel-good feeling and go and take a deep dive into someone else's world and just escape for a while. It's okay to escape in different ways. I know during World War II, that's when the black and white movies were really introduced, and it was a way for people to escape from their natural environment with what they were experiencing to go into another place and time. Sometimes just to bring them that relief or that sense of, you know, being in a different place and time, like I said. So look for ways that you can disconnect in a healthy way. And also look for ways to detox the body. Like I said, journaling is such a powerful tool. Most people try to, you know, shun from journaling. But the way that I journal is I just put my timer on for 5, 10, 15 minutes, whatever it is I feel guided to. And whatever it is that comes to me is what I put down on the paper. It could be as simple as, I don't want to journal right now. That's okay. Put it down. Get it out of your body. The more we can get this toxic energy out of our body, the healthier our bodies are going to be. So be mindful of what it is that you're doing and just make every single decision around healing. If you know people that are struggling and you're doing pretty well and you're strong, please reach out to those people, because what you don't know is that that small gesture of just reaching out to them may really make a difference for their day, and it may pull them up out of a space that you didn't even know. It's really, really important that we take care of one another and we're mindful of who it is that really needs help. And people are really struggling right now, so just be really, really mindful of that. So I wanted to introduce you to a topic that we'll be talking about next week. This is something that I think is probably not talked about enough. So next week I'm going to be bringing to you a guest speaker. She is working with people around generational trauma. And Kalitha is an amazing, powerful woman that literally has changed her life just going through and working through generational trauma. A lot of times people that go through trauma, they don't even realize that their DNA is carrying their mom, their dad's genes. And in that gene structure, their parents could have had trauma that they dealt with that now is also part of their body. So she goes into a deeper dive just talking about the generational trauma that we carry and how to stop it, how to stop the generational trauma from going to the next generation. I think this is a topic, like I said, that is not talked about enough because I know for myself personally, both of my parents had trauma and I'm sure their parents did too. For me, it was something that I didn't want to have continue with my children. So I've made a very conscientious decision to try to undo any generational trauma that was brought forward and just work on really healing parts of me that needed the healing and to work through things that were unhealthy. And unfortunately, you know, when we make these decisions to do the healing work, a lot of times the healing work is very uncomfortable. It can create a lot of stress. It can create a lot of imbalance, especially in families. And a lot of times I look at this like a mobile that is hanging from a ceiling. And when all parts are in balance, everything is still. But if one part gets kind of wacky, then all the other parts start moving. And that's kind of what happens with family units when someone's doing their healing work. That's okay, and it will readjust and it will settle down again. But the healing work, I think, is so powerful because it really does help the future generation to be in a better place and a stronger place. So if you have not heard about generational trauma and it's something that you would like to know more about, please, please, please join us next week. So don't forget to join us next week for my conversation with Kalitha Richards on generational trauma. And as always, thank you for being with me. I appreciate you. I love you. And wherever you are in the world, take good care of each other. This is Catherine Daniels with Retreat to Peace. We'll see you next week.